perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott there.
A fighting through the time.
He gets inside.
In any weather you can see us with your grin. The skinhead and skin. You're not where behind the chair.
I'm touching just a little bit of genius.
Welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's a very happy show this week.
It is a very happy show, Nick. And I've gone out of my way. Before the game, did it during the game on Twitter, and after. Whatever happens for the rest of the year, this is a big victory. This is a victory that gives a bit of hope.
Definitely so. Well, I think we should pay tribute to the fact that not only have we won six games in a row, but we've won three games in a row as an underdog. And I couldn't find the last time that it happened. Certainly not in the Damien Hardwick era, not in the Terry Wallace era. They're travelling okay.
But I just want to sort of dwell on the significance of this game. Because, you know, frankly, beating West Coast on a cold, crappy day on Friday Night Football doesn't sell memberships.
It was fun, but yeah. This and game, particularly since they've looked really good the last 2 weeks since we beat them.
This game sells memberships.
Oh, yeah. This is the going to work, going to school, feeling proud.
Big Melbourne. Yeah. And that's become a cliche with the support the players have been saying. But, you know, frankly, no one cares about Brisbane and GWS. Like, it's nice to beat them, but it doesn't.
How many GWS players can the average fan name?
But when you beat in front of an almost 60,000 crowd, a big traditional rival, the game went back and forth. Like, the game was even better than the victory. I had to go back, Dick. We definitely haven't had a win this good for a year. The last win this good was beating Hawthorn.
Last year.
Yeah, yep. Which was in the round before this one. So it's been a full year where we've had a good win. And it was back and forth. It was a pulsating game, like a really stirring game. And the game was just fantastic. You know, even statistically, and we'll get to this, it wasn't a dominant performance, but just as a performance, as a bit of theatre to make you want to support the Tigers, it was just a fantastic game.
It was a great game. It was a funny game for, you know, we lost the contested possession, which is normally a huge part of our game. It's a huge part of what Dimmer talks about. We're minus 12 inside 50s, which is normally a bad thing, and yet we had three more scoring shots.
And Dimmer said we lost all the KPIs that he measures. But I always think the Essendon version of us would, if there was one hypothetical, would argue that Essendon deserved to win. But I think scoring shots is always a powerful one. Like, I think it was genuinely a 50-50 game, but we've lost 50-50 games before.
Yeah.
You've got to celebrate them when you win them. And it was a good game. The guys played hard. And Nick, just bizarrely one stat that went the other way. We had the best tackle count differential we've had since round six or five versus Brisbane. Just so bizarre.
And it was driven by the fact that in the last quarter, we had 16 more tackles than Essendon did. That's a mammoth effort.
Exactly. It's sort of things like that. It's the line in the sand that, you know, it was a counter-punchers game. There were training punches all game. But when things got tough in the last, we stuck it out. And it's just so meaningful. It would have been so bad if it gone the other way. Let's not talk on that. But it was so good that we came through with the win.
No, look, it's almost a game where both teams would have been unlucky to lose. But I think we would have been more unlucky to lose. You know, we had Gordon's goal a second after the siren in the third quarter. Like, it just, and the momentum swung back and forth. Like, we had our customary quiet spot at the start of the third quarter, but then I thought we finished the game well. I thought we finished most of the quarters well, actually.
We finished the third well. We actually wound up winning the third. We did have we haven't slayed that dragon because we had the customary fade out. But, Nick, stand out for me that Dusty's goal in the third quarter, when it was actually Gordon's goal that really was against the Tide. That was a great goal. But Dusty's goal, it was such a star moment in the third. You sort of knew he was going to kick it. It was such a Dusty moment. And it was to the punt road end. And the crowd was, you know, you could hear the roar going out. Had there been a camera on me at that point, I think I would have, you know, that was certainly the highest vertical I've reached in a while as I jumped up out of my seat to celebrate. I was just like, moments like that, it's, you know, why you support football.
it was just sensational. Commenting on the Gordon goal in the third quarter, like, Courtney Dempsey has jumped off his feet, slammed into him, borderline 50-metre penalty, and yet, as with...
Had he done that for Cochin, it would have been a 50.
Yeah. As with seemingly every time Essendon gave a free kick away, they just had this shocked, innocent look that they could have possibly had a free kick given away against them. Like, what is their sense of entitlement?
I was going to talk about it later, but since you're on this topic, I watched really closely. I went back on the tape two or three times to work out why Carlisle was so annoyed at Newman. And as far as I could tell, is that when they were sort of walking around, that Carlisle's walking backwards and Newman sort of gently bumped in. And it looked really slight. And Carlisle just lost his mind. Like, he got away with a punch to Newman's stomach, just got away with it, and then he just talkity-talkity-talkity-talkity, didn't stop, and then inexplicably, when the umpire was right there, just grabbed him in the neck. It was so stupid.
Oh, dude, I had my notes from the game. Their discipline was pretty poor, I thought. Free kicks given away, some stupid free kicks, like... In a tight game, they're the things that cost you.
They don't run... I mean, we have an issue with... We've probably got one too many bad kicks in the team at the moment, but they have quite a few bad as well. Like, they noticeably miss a lot of kicks. I do like some of the way they play footy, but I don't want to talk about them.
Nah, sort of.
What was your favourite individual performance?
I've got a lot. For given... We only had, I think, four guys over 20 disposals, which is a really low count for a winning game.
Yeah, it's really unusual for us to get beaten in the disposals. It's not a KPI, but, you know, we were, you know, not soundly, but quite reasonably beaten in the disposals, and to still have more scoring shots is quite remarkable for us. It may be the sign, because it's happened twice in recent weeks that we've won having less disposals. It may be a sign that the game plan is evolving slightly. Anyway, we can come back to that. What were you going to say?
Well, you know, loads of guys deserve to be proud. You know, Anthony Miles back to having a really good game. Footy, I thought Lids coped.
14 in the first quarter.
13 in had his own football. Used the ball better than he has some other weeks as well.
Yeah, I really liked. I've said this to you offline, but he did some really. I think one of the hardest, the most underrated kicks is the sort of 40-meter kick between a zone, and he hit a couple of those kicks, which really impressed me. Like, that's what Anthony Miles needs to use the ball well, because he's never going to be a 55. He's never going to kick like Lids. Mm. He just doesn't have the right technique. He doesn't have the core strength to do it. But if he can be clever with his ball use. That's all you need from him, because he gets plenty of the ball, had plenty of pressure acts, he's doing everything else that you want a player to do.
If Jack had kicked straight, he's had a really good game against a good opponent. Like, I thought, you know, he wasn't winning a lot of one-on-ones, but, you know, he's ended up with a good disposal count, he's taken some key marks.
He led the team for score assists.
Yeah, he just... Score involvements. He didn't get frustrated, which he can do sometimes when he's against a good opponent, and just really kept going.
I was quite amused. It was typical Bloody Jack that, you know, he missed the odd 50-50 shot, and then four guys around him, sort of blind left foot snap, and the goal goes through in the fourth quarter at a crucial moment. It's just Jack.
I wasn't that surprised, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true. If it was anyone else, you'd be more surprised, but it was a very Jack moment.
Speaking of his key forward partner, it wasn't a career high in disposals for Griff, but it certainly was his best game as a centre half forward, I thought.
It was his career high. I went back. It's his career high as playing in the forwards. This year he's only played forwards, and almost all year he's played 12 games, I think, and all year he basically had less than single digit disposals. His highest is he's had 11. Till then. So you think the difference between 11 and 14 is quite a lot. Yeah. Your previous best game out of almost, you know, more than 10 games was 11 disposals, and now you've gone up to 15. Two contested marks. Nick, I thought it was a really good game from Griffin. Mm. And what I really like about him is he controls the contest in his area. He does this, I think, better than any player on our list at the moment. The ball's kicked in his zone. Even if he's 2-on-1, he's strong enough to make sure the other team doesn't take a mark.
No, there's still... you still want more. Like, he had a couple of occasions where he didn't keep his feet, or just didn't quite grab the ball cleanly. But that just goes to show how much potential he has.
There was a moment in the fourth where he, you might remember it, I think it was Rance, took the high-risk kick and cut it back into the middle of the ground, which is, I'm really glad he did, because we weren't going to our shell in the fourth when we were under pressure. And Griffo did the half volley, hard ball. Like, that was a moment of skill and a crucial moment in the game. He, to me, is, and fair enough, you don't have to agree, but to me, his was the standout, most interesting individual performance, because I thought it was by far his best game in Richmond Colts. He had a good game against St Kilda as a defender, but, I mean, playing... let's be honest. Key forwards are far more valuable than key backs.
I know. We've talked about this 4 weeks as being, you know, his audition. And, yeah, as we've heard from one of the followers on Twitter.
And look, it's been going around. There are rumours, you know, he's out of contract. There are rumours he hasn't signed his contract. The other teams are after him. One way or other, he's not a free agent. You know, this is a bad thing for Benjamin Griffiths, and it's not a bad thing for the Richmond Football Club. Whether he goes or stays, look, we have a lot of players who play his position, but I'm really glad the kid's playing good football. The one thing is, though, I don't think he's got a career in media after football.
No, I don't think he's done many interviews, to be honest.
No, he comes across as a good kid, but the way he says, we have a steely reserve, and he doesn't look you in the eye.
No, if he can say that sort of stuff, it's really funny.
Anyway, a really pleasing game, really fun football to watch. Who else stood out to you?
Well, since I just mentioned him, you know, I love Evie even when, as he said himself, he got jumped on all night by Ryder.
Nick, we've been doing this show for a few years.
Yep.
And before Evie arrived, we had crap ruckman.
Yeah.
But the one thing, that they're often better at tapping than they were around the ground.
Yep.
And
Angus Graham had really high tackle stats for ruckman.
And we always used to talk about that fans, if you don't clunk marks, like those couple of contested marks really raise the opinion of ruckman and fans. If he only had a few contested marks, by most measures, he just lost to Ryder. Less hit out, slight less disposals, slight less clearances, slight less contested possessions. A few nice contested marks. By the way, there was at least two moments in the game where one of Griffo and Maric was going to take a contested mark and Maric took it in front of Griffo,
which is pretty funny.
We've got some good contested marking players at the moment with Griffo on the team. That doesn't happen when Vickery's in the team. Maric, there's just something about him. He does the right thing at the right moment, and you can just trust him when the ball goes to him. Those solid marks, the fact that he's a reasonably good kick for goal, even though he's a ruckman.
I think
he inspires confidence.
I think the midfielders walk a bit taller. He's in the team.
I think he's that kind of ruckman, and it's an old school ruckman. And how can you not love him?
We love him.
Yeah.
Let's just mention Alex Rance really quickly, because he's having a really good season, and he was really good again.
Huge game next week. Plays well next week. It's always tough to get all Australian in a mediocre team, but it comes closer.
I know. They were talking on the telecast about all Australian candidates, and I'd be really annoyed. When you look at how much he gives us offensively, he certainly belongs in the 40-man squad.
Unsung hero, Nick. Pedard.
I was going to mention him. I loved his body slam tackle. That was sensational.
His tackling was great. His pressure ups were really high. I think the highest I could ever remember him having. And, you know, just, again, a very solid effort. I can just tell Pedder's the kind of football that Damien Hardwick would love.
Well, that he gives us athleticism around the ball, and like he closes that last couple of meters quickly, nails the tackle. Like I think that sort of stuff we need to some extent.
He's also sort of the designated one player who's allowed to play forward and back.
Yeah, because we do have a lot of specialist defenders at the moment with Batchelor, Grimes and Morris in the team. I think they had a total of 17 disposals between the three of them. But Batchelor and Grimes, well, frankly, they've been doing a good job defensively, and there's not a really obvious option to replace them. Yeah. Morris didn't have a great game.
No, just on the three of them. I was sort of looking at that. I was idly looking at the champion data ratings as one of those composite ratings that, of course, they only measure your offensive output. They're not so good at measuring what you do defensively other than tackles. It's unusual to have many, to have one player with as low, they're sort of their weekly output, their average weekly output. It's unusual to have one player with such a low score that's a permanent member of the team, especially in the defense, and we have three of them.
Yeah.
It is. Now, it's obviously been done for structural reasons, and, you know, it's aside from Batchelor, who, when he's marking a key forward, it's hard to find, it's hard to fault them defensively, but we seem to be moving the ball well, despite having three guys who almost do nothing offensively, but it's got to come down at some stage. Mm. At some stage, you think it must come back to haunt us, but it hasn't this week. And you can't actually notice it effectiveness.
This is why I'm holding a candle for Camden McIntosh. He's, you know, frankly, a reasonably obscure footballer, but he is a potentially a 6'4" running halfback with a massive engine who can play on some of the same guys that Grimes and Batchelor do, but also give you more run going the other way.
Mm. And I agree with the Morris comment. I don't want to flog it. I watched it twice because I said something nasty on Twitter. So the second time I watched the game, I tried to find some redeeming things that he did.
Look, he did have some decent contests in the middle of the ground, but he's getting stuck ball watching, which was 2012 Steve Morris rather than 2013. He's a bit off his game.
Yeah, he is. And it is one. I mean, he's elite at diving to distract the kick of his opponent who's got off him previously. But he's not playing well, and it's sometimes painful to watch him when he's going for a cutout mark and the angles he has to throw himself at a contest if he's on his bad shoulder side.
Hmm. One of the guys he played against, Paul Chapman, because we apparently kicked the tyres on him, but his salary demands were too high. And I did think that in making the transition from Geelong to Essendon, frankly, it's been seamless for me. I dislike him exactly as much as I did when he played for Geelong.
I would have happily had him as Tiger, but we digress. Shane Edwards.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, again, do you think Shane Edwards could win the sort of the fifth straight unofficial most improved player award?
I had that exact thought. Like, he's regularly in our top one or two guys for contested possession.
Yep, only one of three with Marich and Miles, who got a +10.
Yep, he's getting on the scoreboard. If he was getting 25 disposals a game, he'd be a real crack at top five in the BNF, but
if he was a 26 disposal gamer player, he might be a crack at a Brownlow, because he's 20.
Yeah.
His touches are high value.
Yeah, he's high, he's good for goal assists. Yeah.
He makes spectacular clearances, he clears space where few other, he's more than the sum of his stats, even advanced metrics.
Oh, no. Yeah. Good to see. You know, again, hate to dwell on the negatives, but Pittard and Thomas are good players for the Richmond Football Club when they're playing at maximum intensity, and whatever it was, Thomas just didn't have it, and it's a shame that Conker's again out this week, because I'd drop him for Conker in a heartbeat.
I thought that was his worst game for the club.
Mm. That's true.
I don't want to kick him too hard. He had, for 11 touches,
yeah,
he had one score involvement. That's extraordinarily hard for a midfielder.
He got outmarked by Zach Merritt, who's 19 years old, and Hardwick subbed him almost straight away. Vlossy had been warming up before then.
But he actually had a terrible minute. Like, I presume that he had been told, it wasn't he just played terribly and he got subbed straight away snab. I think he must have been told I presume that people get told you're about to be subbed, so you have one last burst of effort. You'd hope that happens. Seems logical. Mm. He didn't cope with that well mentally. It was his, he had like a 90 seconds. Like, actually, I noted watching live, he's playing terribly, and then he got subbed instantaneously. So
yep.
I don't think it was a reaction to that. Anyway,
Do you want to hear why I think Blossy was the sub?
Before we go to that, I thought he was quite effective. Like, you can't find it in the stats, but he
particularly,
was...
Particularly in the third quarter, I thought.
He was around the ball a lot, and he was being influential. He seems like... Anyway, tell me your theory.
If you read the very good series of articles with him in The Age and off-season, he just talked about how tired he was during that first season of senior footy. And I think it was done to sort of give him a bit of a freshen up through a long season.
Yes. It could have been done partly on merit because, you know, he does have a small, the knock on him is he's not running out games and sort of perfect years for a sub, a guy who does give you a very good quarter and a half.
And we played Gordon forward for the whole game, and look, he didn't get much of the ball, but and you do want more because he's clearly athletically gifted. He's still very raw as a footballer for a 24-year-old. But you know, two goals, very nearly had a third. I think he can be pleased with his work.
He gets out the back. He creates space. Like it's in the modern AFL with so much rock and roll. The player who has line-breaking speed has become more valuable.
Well, and when he throws himself at the contests, you know, he breaks packs, which is handy.
Yeah, he ran under the ball in marking contests 3 times, which I was thinking the occasion got to him, because that's sort of a nerve thing when you run out of the ball. Though he's just a massive unco. Do you know who he reminds me of?
No.
Poor man's Isaac Smith.
Oh. Yeah, interesting.
Similar running style.
Yeah. I really liked how we, you know, Essendon didn't take their chances at times, but it also felt like we absorbed pressure for reasonable long periods of the game, and that's something that's not been a strength.
Yeah, and partly that's, you know, if you're playing 3 players who are almost exclusively defensive and you're not counting Thomas in that, you would hope that you can hold
true,
that.
But and Rance and Chaplin both playing well, and we haven't mentioned Chaplin, but again, he played well. But yeah, the defence is playing well as a unit at the moment.
Nick, I want to talk about Dusty.
Hmm.
So after that goal, by the way, there was a great moment where he ran off the ground straight away and Choco... like was just expressionless, gave him a very subtle fist bump.
Nice.
And that was it, but nothing more needs to be said. He's averaging more than 25 touches a game. Last 2 weeks, he's averaging about 18.
He's spending a lot of time forward.
According to the champion, the rather complex champion data ratings, last week, like on Friday night's game, he was actually above average in output. So, you know, I mean, yes, he gets a lot more touches sweeping off the back flank when he plays in the midfield or back, but yeah, maybe this is more valuable.
Well, again, it's the Anthony Miles effect. There's a lot more guys helping out, winning the ball. It's fun to see. So, one thing that came up during the week, and one of our listeners asked about it, was an article about how Dimmer said he was a bit caught out at the start of the year by the interchange gap, and he'd sort of been leaving a few too many in the tank at the first month or so of the season, which, to be honest, I don't think contributed hardly at all to us losing. I think there were far more fundamental issues than that.
It did happen in... It's a couple of the games, unfortunately, that where this effect was most pronounced were some of our closest losses. But
yeah,
coulda, shoulda, woulda. What can you do? Anyway, what are you going to say?
Yeah, and look, I had a look at some other games, and actually, interesting in this game this week, we were consistently about 10 interchange more than Essendon, and they didn't use like nearly 20. So you know, clearly, different teams take different approaches to it, but there's not a really strong link between number of interchanges and teams winning.
Fair enough. It was an interesting comment. I must admit, I'm still yet to hear a sort of conflicting versions of how our game plans changed what went wrong early in the year. It's sort of I've yet to hear the killer explanation.
But I'm very much inclined to the we've got more players playing well at the moment, which is making Dimmer a much better coach.
On Dimmer, I've never seen him so angry in a box.
When he stormed down to the box?
Just he also almost broke a phone. He was banging it so hard. Like he was very emotional. Like, let's be perfectly honest.
He wanted that one.
If Morris had one more goal kicked him in the last, we'd lost that game. And, you know, we'd lose to Adelaide and Sydney. There would have been some hard questions asked, very hard questions asked by the board. But that was a swing game. Went the right way. But afterwards, it was fantastic. It was just going back to what we talked about, what a great win it was. It meant a lot to the players. They did not celebrate any game this year as hard as they celebrated that one. It was a fantastic moment. Just on the coaching, before we go off it, Nick, I did feel sorry for that guy. You have one job. Your job is to hold the board. He dropped the board on Dimmer and Lids's head. Lids didn't look very happy about it.
And Riedel got his missed on my hair.
A crucial moment in the game.
Do you know how much money I've spent on this hair?
I felt so sorry for that poor assistant who I didn't recognise, so I presume isn't, you know, a big name on a big salary. So,
I'm assuming the guy holding the board doesn't get paid a lot.
So I felt so sorry for that guy. He's probably, you know, feeling pretty bad about that moment.
So, it wasn't the only time the Richmond Football Club won on the weekend. Saturday night, the VFL team had a big win, which, frankly, was to be expected because Bendigo are struggling, but, hey, you know, still take it.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Tim Young after the game. He said that Bendigo was, you know, they haven't won a game.
Yeah.
You know, expected to beat them, so they didn't play it up too much, but as you'd expect, the forwards all had a good game. But I have been reflecting on this that, like, it is quite hard to get a game. A, our VFL team isn't very good. B, that we put such an emphasis on forward pressure that it's hard. Like, you can... If you go out there and you're trying to get yourself noticed by doing forward pressure on a team that's not playing very well, well, Jake King never got... You know, I think Jake King is basically David Hardwick's... The good Jake King, not the sort of broken down end of his career. Jake King's Damien Hardwick's perfect forward, particularly small forward. It's hard to make an impact sometimes consistently, especially when you're young. But this week, everything was blowing their way.
Yeah. So, well, we've got to start with him. My boy, Liam McBean, 5 goals. He's the leading goal kicker in the VFL. And it sounds like he kicked for goal well, but without having seen the tape yet, it doesn't sound like he was at an overwhelmingly good game of football. I was actually more encouraged both by Ben Lennon, again, high number of disposals, but he had 6 tackles, and that's been one of the tasks set to him to improve his contested work. But pretty much best on ground effort by Chris Knights. 29 disposals, 6 clearances, 2 goals. Like, if he's training well this week, he's got to be setting off a few little idea bubbles for the selection committee, I think.
I thought about that too. He's close. I can't help thinking back to last year when Chris Knights just killed it in the VFL when he was fully fit. And I just wonder how, I said it last week as well, I wonder how fit he is. It's a really interesting one this week.
Against his old club. What about as the sub?
Well, that thought crossed my mind too. But does Lennon give you... Lennon can play more probably positions than Knights can at this stage in his career. Because Lennon has been playing off the halfback flank too, whereas Knights has not. And poor old McBean. I think, you know, you look around the AFL, I was looking at sort of average statistical output. The guys who get the least in the AFL, guess who the Bombers' worst player is who plays regularly for them?
I don't know.
Danaher.
Oh, yeah. That'd be better, right? Developing key tall forwards.
And Boyd. Yep. Worst place, consistently, statistically, worst player in the GS. GWS, the worst player field, is more competitive, but it's hard in the AFL, and it's a big investment to play McBean, who probably deserves it, this game. Before we get onto this game, Nick, I don't want to completely. We should also, Toddy Banfield, I think, had his best game for the VFL team, 20 touches, and in the very best player in one report. But I just
honestly don't think the selection committee have talked about him very much this year.
No, but we need speed in the forward line. I actually don't think he's that far away if he plays one more good game. I mean, it's not a coincidence. Gordon wasn't dominating when he got picked. He is, like, he played one good game.
No, look, the speed and the athleticism is definitely at a premium.
And Essendon picked Delulio, having played rubbishly off the VFL, and Delulio is essentially the Essendon version of Gordon and Banfield. Anyway, before we get on to the Adelaide game and the final situation, because we've got quite a lot to talk about there, what did you think about Dimmer's comment that this is a better team than the 2013 team?
I think he's almost under obligation to say that.
But, yeah, that's true.
Because
if you say the reverse, we were better last year, no one wants to hear that.
No. Last year, obviously, had fewer injuries, certainly fewer injuries to key players. Felt like a much more consistent team. Like, this team, as of right now, given the injury list, is probably playing better. But yeah, last year was giving very consistent output.
Yeah, right now, but in fairness, I think it's easy to say it when you've sort of had six games in a row where you haven't had to play the top four. Like, you know, let's see it at the end of the year. But I agree. Like, at the time, I thought that's an interesting comment by Denman, got picked up by the press, but what's his alternative? Let's assess it at the end of the year when the full body of work's in. Speaking of the full body of the year, Nick, before we talk about Adelaide, let's talk about the final eight situation.
I've other than barracking for Collingwood to lose, which is, comes pretty naturally, I've not actually run through the numbers.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of teams.
I've just assumed that if we win every game, it's pretty unlikely that we won't make it.
Yeah, and that's a pretty fair assumption. There's six, arguably seven clubs in the mix. Almost all of them are playing losable games. And it was really good that Collingwood got beaten, because Collingwood have the softest two games coming up. They have Hawthorn in round 23. Hawthorn will almost certainly be motivated. The season will be live for them in round 23.
They like beating Collingwood too.
Yes, they do. So we're one game behind them, but have better percentage, so we will probably catch them. Adelaide have two hard games. They have to play us. They're a game ahead of us, game and percentage ahead of us. So we have to basically be a game in front. They play us, and they play North Melbourne, who have plenty to play for in Tasmania. They have beaten North Melbourne earlier this year.
That's a pretty tough game.
Yes. Essendon have some soft games coming up, including West Coast in Melbourne, but I think West Coast don't have the stones to beat Essendon in the MCG, so that wipes West Coast out. So they're in front of us too, but I don't think they're really an issue. I do think and Essendon are playing Carlton in round 23, so that's... Carlton might get up for that game. There is quite a strong historical precedent of teams losing.
They're both sort of 60-40 games.
Yeah, so it comes down, I think, to Adelaide's spot. And I think we can take Adelaide's spot. Gold Coast, even though their win total is great, they're out. They're playing terribly and have tough games. So it really comes down to Adelaide, and I think if we win three in a row. So the hardest thing in the chain...
I am expecting that St Kilda, having had, the big emotional Lenny Hayes farewell, who, the drums are beating, we've offered an assistant coaching spot to. I reckon they'll be extremely beatable and possibly even for a bit of a percentage boost. If we're still alive.
Oh, St Kilda, absolutely. Yeah. The Sydney game, I think, will be the tough one, because I think their season will be...
Well, we're going to start underdogs for the fourth week in a row against Adelaide.
Yeah. Anyway, but before we get to Sydney... But that's... It will... To me, the hardest thing that has to happen is us beat Sydney round 23.
Yes.
This week, though, is the second hardest thing that we have to do.
Mm. They're a pretty good team.
They are. They've been a one-win, one-loss team almost all year.
They have. And the reason why they're so inconsistent is they're both good at kicking goals. They've got a three-pronged forward line, pretty much the equal of anyone outside of Hawthorn and Sydney. Josh Jenkins, you know, unexpectedly turned into quite a productive key forward. Eddie Betts, we all know about. Tex Walker's back and after a short adjustment period, he's playing some pretty good footy.
Yeah. So I've gone back and looked at the last three times we've played them. We've only played them once a year for the last 3 years. We have a 2-1 record against them.
Mm.
Now, last year we beat them in G pretty comfortably. You might remember the game. Paddy Dangerfield was awesome. Tex Walker didn't play.
Mm.
The year before we lost to them. I actually thought we were a bit unlucky to lose that game. We had a few injuries, a few questionable, weird selections, but we were close, we were gamey, and Walker kicked six.
Mm.
Year before, we beat them in Adelaide. You might remember that was probably Tyrone Vickery's best game as a Tiger.
Yep.
And we beat them and Walker was ineffectual. This is, I think, the 1 week since Alex, Dave Asprey got injured that we're really missing him, because it's the 1 week that you, one of those rare teams that having three big strong backs you really need. But the form line is that we can beat this team. Now, Scotty Thompson, Nick, best player, plays all right against us, got this weird hamstring that he's sort of having 1 week on, 1 week off.
Yep. Dangerfield's a bit dicey at the moment with a knee. Yep.
Had his worst game for quite a while.
A young guy who, if he played in Melbourne, would be getting a lot of publicity is Brad Crouch. And he should be a fantastic player because he was one of these priority 17-year-olds that Adelaide traded the equivalent of two first-round draft picks to get. But he's fifth in the AFL for handballs. He's 20 years old and he's averaging 26 disposals a game.
And was brilliant last week.
Brilliant last week, good again this week. He's almost, if Dangerfield's not at full strength, he's the opposition midfielder where we'd need to be focused on, assuming Thompson, or depending on if Thompson plays.
And it is it's a terrible injury because it's career-threatening, but it is handy that Otten's got injured because he's been playing good footy.
Yeah, and it was an impressive win today, winning by 100 points with two first-half injuries is a pretty fair go.
Yeah, Brisbane Heat, though, it's got to be sapping. Got to be exhausted coming back on the plane.
You know, they run reasonably deep, Adelaide, but you can kick scores on them. Like, if we can absorb some of the pressure, win some of those one-on-one contests, as we did in our back line this week, move the ball quickly across half-back, we can certainly win this.
So, Nick, by my count, it's our third elimination final we've played in recent weeks because, you know, carrying the West Coast and the Essendon game, they're all eight-point games. So this is the third elimination final. And we'll play in, if we win, we'll get the right to play in the fourth elimination finals before we get to the actual final series. So it's certainly, the stakes are high.
I know, we can win, and we're playing well enough to win, but people shouldn't be taking this one for granted as well. This is another 50-50 game. It's going to be tough.
We'll be underdogs.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. You know, they can put a score on the board. Just hope the boys can do it.
It's sort of nice, though, to come in. Like, almost think that we're going to win, and it's sort of nice to go into that game where you're actually underdogs with that feeling.
We're riding the roller coaster, and frankly, right now, it's pretty fun.
I think we deserve some karmic payback.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.